bung bung. Please go to Claymic Mouth Comedy for all of my tour dates. We are all over the place in South Australia, Victoria. We've just finished our Fringe run, very successful run. So thank you to all the listeners who came out to shows then. ClaymicMouthComedy.com for all my tour dates and podcast merch. Go buy yourself a Welcome to the Potty tee or an Unsourced tee, Welcome to the Potty golf hat, whatever it is, whatever suits you, go buy it. If you want to support the show, just share the show and you know, give us a little screenshot in the DMs and you automatically enter the draw to win free merch every month. And if you share the show 20 times, you get 20 entries. It's as simple as that. 1,000 times, 1,000 entries. And we've got a little database that shows what merch you've won, so you'll never double up on the same merch when you win. Like, that is completely organized. That's the most organized thing we do here at the Welcome to the Potty podcast. So please share the show, tell a friend, and as always, bung bung.
Fuck that. Perk up and level up with Bung Bung Coffee's delicious modern dark roast, your favorite brewer's favorite brew. BungBungCoffee.com.
Welcome to the party, best show on the internet, ask anybody. You know it's easy money, sit back, relax, get your headphones, everybody. Welcome to the party, blackout in the booth, every episode's a party. We go hard like Ricky Bobby, tell a friend to tell a friend, this is Welcome to the Party.
Welcome to the party, bung bung. It's your man Claytron, aka the big boss man, aka the clumsy jeweler, because I'm always dropping gems, aka the milkman. Because I always deliver, aka the PhD of podcasting, the magnum PI of podcasting, the captain, the D-Lo of podcasting, because I can't stop running my mouth. And I'm here with Boardman, aka the Swaggy P of podcasting, the first victim of D-Lo's loose lips, no home loans.
It's like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah, man.
He's back at it.
So what happened the first time? You're a Laker fan.
Yeah, he like outed Swaggy P on Instagram or something, like took a photo of his messages to other girls. This is while he's with Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, right. So that it was just a photo. He wasn't like a video of him on the phone with someone else, or it was just like a.
I don't think so. I think it was just like
picture of his DMs or something.
Picture of his DMs with other chicks.
What the? Who does that?
D-Lo.
That's so crazy, dude.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Nah. And it doesn't sound like, I actually heard an interview with Swaggy P recently. It sounds like that is like a definitely a tainted relationship. Like that hasn't recovered.
Yeah, okay.
Like he's still foul on him for that.
He got shipped out pretty quickly after that, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, and it's just sucker shit, man. Like who, like what grown man, like you learn the rules as a man pretty early in life.
Mm.
I still think like, I know cheating is wrong, right? You're not supposed to do it. I'm not supposed to encourage my friends to do it, and I wouldn't. But, like, I wouldn't even give, like, if you were doing it, I wouldn't even give you an ultimatum. I wouldn't be like, you've got to tell her or I'm telling her. I'd just be like, bro, you got to figure it out. You got to choose one and you got to end it. Like, I wouldn't take it upon myself to, like, one, blast it out to the world, which is nuts, but, like, even just tell her. It's not my role.
Yeah, I feel you.
I just think it's so foul. And D-Lo, D-Lo's out here. He's snitching again, not on the same level.
And he was pretty young at the time. What, like 19, 20?
You knew better than that in high school, bro. You know you did. It's crazy. Different generation. No, he's probably your age. Maybe older. He's probably older than us.
I reckon we're older than him.
We're older than him?
D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Find that man's birthday, because I thought for a minute that I was older than Steph Curry, but he's 36. Yeah, he'd be a few years. He'd probably be around our age, D-Lo.
28.
28? Mm. Jeez, he's that young. Yeah, I guess that's kind of a different generation. Yeah, I don't know. Is there no real ones then helping the kids come up right now? What about, like, and forgive me if the, you know, the situation's not there, but like what about that man's father? Was he not, could he not show him the game?
It's all great questions, man.
Maybe he's, you know,
I think it's not just a different generation.
Yeah, I just think that's so whack. Like, someone has to tell these.
So many of these young dudes in the NBA are just doing wild shit all the time on social media.
Yeah, and I do wonder, because it is like a generational difference with, like, and I don't want to get into it, but like all the like identification stuff at the moment, where you can identify as this, that, and the third. Like, that's not coming from parents. It's coming from somewhere else, because parents don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I guess it's just like some generational shift with, like, I guess, like, yeah, there's no realness. You're just like phony, baloney, fugazi suckers.
Yeah, I mean, they've just come up 100% immersed in this social media game.
Yeah.
Whereas us, it was like a new thing.
How much old, like, Swaggy would be much older than D'Angelo Russell, because he played with like Gilbert Arenas.
He'd be like creeping up towards 40.
Yeah.
I reckon, like,
because he, 20, remember when Gil got in trouble for having a gun in the locker room and he got suspended?
I remember it, but barely. So Nick Young's 38 years old.
Okay. So and 10
Gil
years.
Gil would be older than that.
He's 10 years older than D'Lo.
Yeah.
So he got suspended because he had a gun in the locker room. And then when he came back, his first game back in the player intros, he comes out like this. And Swaggy P was behind him, like, taking the shots, no home loans. And so Swaggy P actually also got fined. They both got fined for that intro. Really? Swaggy P got fined as like a, I don't know, like an accessory, I guess. But yeah, that shows his age, because if you played in that era with Gil at the Wizards, that's a long time ago. So he's clearly, yeah, a decade older than D'Lo. So he would have been like, what the fuck are you doing, kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long ago did that all go down with Gilbert Arenas? I remember hearing about it, but I wasn't that tuned into the NBA at that point.
I feel like we may have even been in high school at that point.
Okay.
Does that sound right? Or maybe like soon after?
I feel like we're still in high school when this happened.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah, but anyway, the reason I wanted to talk about D'Lo is because he's talking again. And I think it's just crazy. Like these, like you said, this generation, they don't know how to maneuver themselves. He was doing one playoffs last year, bum shit. Start of this season, trash. Now he's.
Oh, the trade deadline was approaching. He's just started balling out of his mind.
Yeah, he's picked it up. He's picked up steam. Points per game is up. Field goal percentage on those points per game is very impressive as well. And all of a sudden, he's in a, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a podcast or some sort of interview, saying that he wasn't able at the start of the season to, or maybe last year, he wasn't able to develop a relationship with Darvin Ham.
Old pockets? Old Darvin Ham always got his hands in his pockets.
Oh,
Darvin
really?
Ham is just doing nothing out there.
Pockets. Yeah, he wasn't able to develop a relationship with Darvin Ham because of Dennis Schroeder's relationship with him, which is, I mean, ironic to say the least. I guess that's maybe why Iggy Azalea couldn't develop a relationship with Nick Young, is because of his relationship with others as well. So he doesn't like people having relationships with other people, it sounds like.
Possessive dude.
Yeah, but it's so crazy, bro, to say that. And it's like, all of a sudden, you start to hit a couple shots. Now you're talking that talk. You go one, get into the playoffs. Get the fuck out of the play-in section of the standings. Get into the playoffs. Make a playoff run. Play well in the playoffs, and then get some shit off your chest. Don't do it now. Don't do it while people are listening and are like, okay, well, when it comes around to that, we're just going to have to turn it up on them.
Yeah, it's just giving everyone ammo.
Yeah. And like, look at what Denver have done to the Lakers this year. They've just lit them up, because the Lakers got mad at Mike Malone talking that talk after they won the championship, and then the Lakers came out, oh, next year, you know, you want to talk all that? We'll see what happens in the next season. And Mike, well, I guarantee the post-game, the pre-game talk before every time they play the Lakers is as simple as this. Guys, you heard what I said. You heard what I said at the parade. They're mad about it. They think they're going to come out here and beat us. So we just got to turn it on tonight. Then Jokic is like, okay.
Yeah, he's a fucking assassin.
Yeah, bro. We were watching the Nuggets yesterday, or maybe the day before, whenever they last played. And it was yesterday. And Rach was watching it with me. She doesn't always watch NBA with me. And I was like, see this guy in the pink shoes? He's the best player in the league. She's like, what? I was like, yeah. And he also makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
hate when my team comes up against him.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. At least your team, like, I don't know. I'm not a Laker fan. I was watching them a few days ago too. They don't run any plays. They don't run any offenses.
What are they doing? Just motion?
It's just they'll swing it a couple times and then someone ISOs from the top.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
They'll sometimes get a post feed for AD, but he doesn't even want the ball there.
No, it's not the prettiest basketball to watch.
No, a lot of even ISO stuff. Coming out of timeouts, it's almost like you often have a play that you draw up specifically for timeouts. You don't run it any other time. And you call it and you're like, guys, all right, we're going to run DC. And I just looked at your shirt. And and then you go out and you almost always get a bucket off of it. It's just like
or at least a good look.
Yeah. And they come out of a timeout, they throw it to someone standing at the logo. And that's it. There's no action down the bottom. It's just like a high 1-4. It's like, what are we doing? It's so frustrating. I'm not even a Laker fan. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's rough to watch.
Yeah. But like then they've got enough talent to like get them over the line. I just don't think without some sort of structure and defense that you guys can make a playoff run. Unless you've got all this shit in the bag, you're waiting to pull out at playoffs.
Yeah, that's just been the story with the Lakers for a few years now.
Yeah.
It's like pretty regular, mediocre season, then just expect to flip a switch in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Turn it around, which they were able to do last year until they met Denver.
Yeah.
Like they were looking really good in those playoffs.
Yeah, they were. I can't talk with my Bulls. My Bulls, we make it to the play-in and we're like, we did it, guys. That counts as playoffs. No, it doesn't. And now we get no draft picks because we're too good for draft picks and too shit for anything else.
Yeah, it's a pretty rough place to be.
It's the worst,
man. What's the latest with Lonzo? Heard some rumors about him like being cleared for activities.
Yeah, cleared for basketball
he's
activities.
He's allowed to walk now?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means, but there was no mention of like a time frame or whether he'll play a game before the end of the season. Who's our point guard? Kobe White. Like, he's not replacing him. He's having his best season in the NBA so far. Ayo Dosunmu. I've talked him up because I'm a fan. If he played for anyone else, I'm sorry, but I'd consider him a bum.
Oh, he wouldn't even be a six man in the other team.
Yeah. So he could maybe like bump him down the bench a little bit.
It's a shame, man, because I like Lonzo.
Me too.
Not just the Lakers bias either. Like, it's just a fun play to watch.
Actually, after the Lakers is when he sort of started to get it together a little bit.
Got out of that spotlight.
Yeah, and his dad stopped talking. I haven't seen his dad for a long time. But in light of recent events, some of these dudes need a dad like LeVar.
Need that figure.
Like Jar. You got T. Morant just like living that free life. I got courtside tickets and champagne and private jets. I'm T. Morant. I don't give a fuck if my son carries a gat. It's like, okay, well, he's going to fuck the money up. Someone needs to talk to this nigga and it's got to be you. It can't be Jalen Rose. Like, what are we doing, man? T. Morant's got to step up. That's what LeVar would have come out, done a press conference like, yeah, I'm going to take my kids back to the crib and give them a spanking like it's 2002 or something, you know?
Yeah, he's just been fully like iced out of the media, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I haven't even heard that guy's name.
Yeah.
This podcast for like 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. So shout out to LeVar. Yeah, you're back in the media. Back. Yeah, man. It's just, who else? Who else has been fucking up? Anthony Edwards, Jalen Green. Zion.
What's Anthony Edwards been doing?
You know, requesting abortions. Send a pic, lol.
Yeah, that was crazy. So crazy.
Jalen, you know, Jalen Green has got like an absolute, you know, wag pregnant. I think she's been pregnant by like three famous dudes before or something, or at least like giving them that top, you know. It's wild. It's wild how, I think we've talked about it before. I don't want to get into it too much again, but like how all these dudes share the same bitches, man. Like, so gross.
Yeah.
So gross. Even like one, sharing them with teammates is crazy. Like, I don't want to hook up with anyone that you've hooked up with, but like, even in the same league, like I'm not heaps keen on like, you know, playing in the local league here and like hooking up with a chick that like, one dude from Norwood's hooked up with, one dude from Forestville's hooked up with, and one dude from South's hooked up with. Like, that's kind of sicko shit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And that's what the NBA is. And we're talking about a whole country with, I don't even know what the population is over there. Half a billy?
Probably around like 350 mil.
Yeah.
I would have thought.
Yeah. It's like, there's girls out there. You know, there's beautiful women out there that don't have an OnlyFans account. You know, you can get with someone off of OnlyFans.
It is an option.
Yeah.
Like, you can go down that route if you want. So there's 341 million.
Yeah. And they're all sharing the same four bitches.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's disgusting, man. But it's like you said before, the growing up in the grip of social media. When we grew up without social media, we might have like a crush on Pamela Anderson, Angelina Jolie, and who was a porn star back then, Jenna Jameson, right? You might have these crushes. Now you have this crush. You've been watching porn or OnlyFans or movies your whole life. You had this crush on this chick, and all you got to do is send a DM, and you've got a blue check, and you got a $350 million contract. It's like a realistic option to bang your crush. And unfortunately, they've all got the same crushes.
It's a damn shame.
Yeah, dude. It's crazy, man. It's just, I just don't like the notion of like sharing the same used up bitches, man. I just think it's real sicko shit, man. Yeah, D-Lo, shut up. Until you guys, or at least yourself, get something done, you got to stop putting a target on your back, I think.
Yeah, I just hope he can keep playing the way he has been, because it's been a breath of fresh air, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I just think the last person you need to be thinking about in the NBA is Dennis Schroeder, dude. I don't even know who he plays for anymore. The other day I was watching Toronto play, and I was like, where's Dennis? He's in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, that's right.
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about this dude for? He's an all-time bag fumbler, and you're saying that his relationship with Darvin Ham was in the way of yours? That's gay, dude. You could have sort that out.
Yeah, didn't really know what to think when I read that quote. So you could have just kept this one to yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes the mic just gets there, and you keep talking. I'm a victim of it every week. Every week, I'm just trying not to have dead air on the show, so I just talk.
Got to keep going.
But I don't think I've snitched on anyone so far, except myself.
Oh, we're in the clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else in the NBA, but what's been happening with you, man? Just finished your fringe shows?
Otto Porter Jr. retired.
Oh, that did happen.
Do you know how old he is?
We'll find out.
Because he mentioned that his body wouldn't let him sort of compete at the level he wanted to compete at anymore.
30.
He's only 30, yeah. So that is young for an NBA player to retire. So that's unfortunate for him. I feel for him. I'm glad he got a chippy before he left. With Golden State, he played for he was probably his best years at the Wizards.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, he came over to the Bulls. It was pretty disappointing. I think he did all right in that championship run. He wasn't getting like huge minutes, but he was
a useful piece on that
team.
Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, congratulations to him. And yeah, I just wanted to shout him out because I knew he was pretty young to retire, man. It sucks.
Can you remember him on the Magic?
Nope.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this list. So, Wizards, Bulls, Magic, Warriors, Raptors. Magic's the only team I can't recall him playing for.
I can't even recall him playing for the Raptors. I thought he might have been waived or retired after that championship. I haven't really seen him since then.
No, so he played that 1 year in Golden State, and then he's been with the Raptors ever since.
Oh, I didn't even know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but shout out to him. Always there is a something that I love about a player retiring, because there's players, especially in the NBL, the Australian League, you got 40-year-old dudes, and like, you know, LeBron is old as hell, but he's still efficient. So, you know, keep going. But we got dudes in the NBL. It's a bit better these days, but you got 40-year-old dudes running around just because of their pedigree. And it's like they're actually not that valuable anymore. And you've got young talent, Australian talent, that isn't playing in the NBL because you're holding on to old heads. And so we're losing a lot of our talent to other countries, going over and playing New Zealand NBL or countries in Europe, going to college, if they're good enough playing NBA, well, why wouldn't you? But like, people are choosing to go to college more than ever, because we won't give any of our young talent a crack here. So whenever someone retires, it's always good to see like, who's going to get a chance now, and are they going to make the most of it? Obviously, in the middle of a season, it's hard to keep up with like who they're going to replace him with. He's probably, since he hasn't been playing, he's probably already, there's someone that's been yeah. there, and it's probably not also getting a lot of burn, but it's good that someone else is going to get that roster experience in the league somewhere. I always love to just think of the opportunity someone's getting when someone retires, yeah.
Apart from Udonis Haslem, who can you think of that just held on a little bit too long?
Probably recently? Vince.
Yeah.
Vince, like, he wasn't doing, he was 6 points. You don't think there's a rookie out there that can get you 6 points? Some G League guy can come get you 6 points? I get the difference because it's a vet, right? Like, and as we've seen with Memphis, there needed to be some veteran leadership somewhere. Marcus Smart, D Rose come down to Memphis. All of a sudden, we haven't seen them dancing. We haven't heard any bullshit.
You don't see teams that lose. That's the thing. Like,
yeah,
Memphis,
true.
Memphis hasn't been in the spotlight because they've been irrelevant all season.
Yeah.
Apart from like historic loss streaks. That's when you hear about losers.
Yeah, yeah, Detroit.
When they're about to break records.
Yeah, Wizards might get back into the fucking spotlight pretty soon.
They are the worst team now, I reckon.
Yeah, Detroit have kind of figured it out.
It's just so funny how like Kuzma was talking all that shit.
Asking now, for it. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Before, you got to do something before you run your mouth, because motherfuckers are going to start coming for you. Not just Detroit. People see what you're saying and people are going to be like, oh, all right, Kuz. All right. You want to lose some games? We'll give you some. Yeah. We'll hand you some hot L's. Yeah.
I hope they have the worst record at the end of the season.
It'd be
a good
beautiful.
Day on X.
Yeah. People be keeping receipts, man. Moving along, fringe season has just ended, so that's why we haven't had an episode in a few weeks, because just trying to manage everything is too much. So I had to take a little break from the podcast. It was sick. I had 2 weeks of multiple gigs every day. And on one of those nights, there's a famous gig in Adelaide run by Mickey D, Adelaide's own Mickey D, called The Fat Cave. It's a late night show, starts at like 11:20 p.m. And he's always got sick lineups on. He put me on for the second time this year. And I followed Stephen K. Amos. A lot of people know him. He's a UK comedian. He's great. And I had a pretty good set. I killed. And
nice.
Stephen K, after I got off stage, was like, oh, great job, man. Awesome job. What's your name? I had a little chat to him, which was sick. Like, I remember like growing up, prior to even thinking that I was ever going to do comedy, like watching him on like Just for Laughs and stuff and thinking he was so funny. And then seeing him and like having him tell me like awesome job was like unbelievable.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
And it's not something that like I realized would be important to me. Cause like when I think of my favorite comedians, I'm always thinking like Bill Burr, Dave Attell, Dave Chappelle, you know, all those classic dudes, Patrice O'Neal, all that. Like, and no offense to Stephen K. Amos, but like, he doesn't come to my mind in that list. But then when that happened, like, I just, the adrenaline and shit that started going through my body, I was like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, I can imagine getting that recognition from your peers.
Yeah.
Especially like, yeah, someone who's been doing it for as long as he has.
Yeah. So that was pretty good sick. Feeling. And then after that show, have you ever heard of Chris Franklin?
No, I don't think so.
He's a Australian comedian, big mullet, big beard. And he did, remember that song, I'm a Bitch? I forget who sang it, but like, I'm a bitch, I'm a
lot. Oh, yeah. I'm having a gaze now. I reckon I recognize this dude.
Yeah, so he did a like remix to that song called Bloke. I'm a bloke, I'm a yobbo, and me best mate's name is Robbo. Like,
yeah, okay, now I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so that song came out 24, 25 years ago. I remember the first time I listened to it, my friend George, he was always a funny guy, always like liked funny stuff, and he would always share stuff with me, and he shared this song with me. And I was like, that is so funny, like, because it's like a remix of this bitch song that was famous as well. He made it to the number one in the Australian charts with this song, and he's just a comedian. And after this gig at Fat Cave, he's like, oh, do you want to come out for a drink? And I'm thinking like, oh, all the comedians are going to meet somewhere. Like, yeah, go get a drink. We go to Fumo Blue. It's just me and him.
Yeah, cool.
I'm sitting down one-on-one with Chris Franklin, having a scotch and coke, talking shit.
Is he from Adelaide or is he just...
Nah, I don't know where he's originally from, but he lives in Tassie now.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd just say Melbourne just because everyone's from Melbourne, but I don't know where he's originally from. But that was like, again, that was like another like moment. I was like, what is happening right now? And then last night I had my two last gigs of Fringe, and the second one, he was the MC. And I was the last act. I went on. I did pretty well. Didn't crush it, but it was fine. And after the show, we were chatting, and he's like, oh, "I've got this room in Melbourne for International Comedy Fest. Like, hit me up, and I'll put you on." I'm just like, "This is
that's
sick.
Awesome, man."
Yeah.
So when's the International Comedy Fest?
April.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've got my mate's wedding on the 6th. Which is like out in the country, like up by the border actually of Vic and New South.
Yeah.
And then we'll come home for like a day, and then I'll get on the plane on the 8th and go to Melbourne for a week.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, and oh yeah, and he performed Bloke live last night.
Is everyone singing along?
50-50. The younger generation had no idea what was happening.
It's been a while since I've heard that, yeah. But I'm sure if I heard it playing, remember a word or two here and there.
I was just like, I said to someone I was with, I was just like, I never really thought about it, but I'm not sure that I ever thought I was going to see this live. And like, it's happening right now. Like, this is so sick. Yeah. So that was, yeah, it's been awesome, man. Like, so a couple of experiences. And then our show, night one, we had 20 people in the door in a 90-seater. But with 20 in it sitting up close, it didn't feel too empty because the back of the room's quite dark. So it still feels nice. Had a reviewer in, 5-star review, baby. So another moment, it was my first ever 5-star review. But shout out to Jay and Justin, Jay Michael and Justin Saw, because it wasn't just a review for me, it was our show. So, that was, and yeah, another moment. We've all been touring for like 2 years now, working together. So it was like a nice feather in the cap for us, I think. Like we're headed in the right direction.
No doubt.
Yeah. So during the week, 9:45 show, it's hard for, like people don't want to go out to a show that starts at 9:45, get home at 11, 11:30, sleep by 12, got to get out for work. So like it's hard to sell tickets. So shout out to everyone that came. But the weekend, sold out Friday, sold out Saturday, banging, energy in the room, just fucking off its head. It was so much fun. Just loved it. So much of a better experience than doing a solo show. I can't stress that enough. Just There's just like a feeling of loneliness, and the stress is all on you. And we stressed about the ticket sales and shit, but it's like, it truly felt like it was divided by three. Like, I was nowhere near as stressed as I was by myself. And we also, like, we hang out before a show, have a drink, talk some shit, and, like, you're just way more relaxed. Which, like, last year, I think I might have talked about it on the show, maybe last episode or sometime leading up to Fringe. Like, there was one night where you came backstage and you helped me set up my backdrop and stuff, and it felt so much better than, like, being back there by myself. And saying, like, shout out to a friend of the show, Steve Calvin Fresh. He did the same thing one night. And those two nights were just like such a different feeling to the nights where I was by myself back there, just like fucking, oh.
I think just from a spectator's perspective as well, like the indoor show was a lot better because there's just so many like background noises in those outdoor sets.
Yeah.
So many distractions. Like, did you, as a performer, were you getting distracted at all with those outdoor shows?
You get distracted. There was, last year I had two Eshays jump the fence, start talking shit, heckling me.
Yeah.
No security to do anything about it. So they're just in there now talking. Mm. I'm trying to deal with them. They got to a point, I think I went over this last year on an episode, like I got to a point where I was mad. I came out of my material. I'm like, just fuck off, cunts. Like, what are you doing? Like, and then everyone feels a bit uncomfortable after that.
Yeah.
And I've got to work harder to get everyone back with me. It derailed the show. Bats fly overhead. Everyone looks up.
Yeah, like carnival rides and shit.
Carnival rides, different shows with loud music, people screaming, ambulances, everything. It's just like, it's crazy. I had someone walk by with like a boombox last year.
Yeah.
And that's a long walk. Yeah. And it's just like everyone, you're trying to tell jokes, everyone's turning around looking back. It's like, man, being indoors was way better. Even last night, the first show I did, Rhino Room on the weekends during Fringe blocks off the laneway next to it, and there's like some outdoor bars down one end, and then down the other end there's shows, and that was one of the shows I did. And of course, when I'm on stage, this, I don't know if it's a police car or an ambulance goes by, but there must have been traffic. So it's just there for 50 seconds. Just woo, woo, woo. I'm just like, man, I tried like, and I wasn't actually like murdering either, but I tried to just like do a little throwaway. Like that's how fucking easy this is, folks. I'm killing right now. But like everyone like kind of, ha, ha, ha. But the sirens, they're just sitting there, so it's still going.
Yeah.
It's like, it's better if it just like speeds by and you say that and be like, ah, whatever. Yeah, indoors is way better. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what I took from this year. I overspent on marketing. That'd be the one thing I'd probably like, just make sure I stick to a strict budget next time. And what else? I just think if I do I will eventually do another solo. I'll have an opener that I can hang with. And
yeah, cool.
Yeah, just then there's a bit less pressure for having a full 50 minutes of material. Maybe you have 40, got some time for your opener, and you've got someone to hang with. And it's just like less stress all around, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, anyway, let's get into Clay's reviews.
Comedy, action, or horror? Will this movie win an Oscar? Set design, directing, acting, lighting, or costumes? This segment is Clay's reviews.
All right, this week we watched Bullet, the 1996 film written by and starring Mickey Rourke, also starring Tupac Shakur, also starring what's his name, old boy, the pianist, Adrian Brody. I forget what the guy's name is from Silence of the Lambs, and who
he sort of talks like this. Put the lotion on the skin, like Buffalo Bill. But then he must sort of sound like that. I don't think I've ever seen him in an interview before. But he sounded like that in this movie. And he was like, first off, you chose this about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, my bad.
And you didn't even watch it.
I tried to, but it's been taken off the streaming service.
Yeah, but you tried to last night.
Better late than never, but I guess.
But it was
late,
never.
Late just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And it was never.
Yeah.
My bad.
I obviously, again, went with chocolate bullets.
Yeah, fitting.
I couldn't not. I couldn't be much more creative than that. It was just too obvious. So I thought if you were going to watch it, I thought maybe we're actually going to land on the same snack this time.
I probably still just would have eaten a Magnum or something.
Yeah, like yeah, Tim Tams. So do you want to give us the plot?
Yep. So paroled after 8 years in prison, Bullet's picked up by his brother and a friend. Bullet assaults a drug dealer and two customers. Things escalate.
Yeah, this is the day he gets out of prison. He goes and I can't even remember the conversation, but I think he's basically trying to get back into the drug game and he stabs this dealer in the eye. And what's Tupac's name in the movie?
Is this Mickey Tank. Rourke? Is
it, yeah, is Mickey Rourke. I think Tupac's name's Tank and the guy's like, Tank's gonna come after you for this. He's like, I know. You know, Mickey Rourke's trying to be a mad tough guy in this. He wrote himself as the tough guy. Dude, there is so much going on in this movie that they didn't put a bow on anything. So Mickey Rourke, Bullet, comes out of prison and I believe he's trying to get back into dealing. He never really does, but I think that's like the whole journey of his character is trying to get back into the game and he's beefing with this kingpin Tank played by Tupac, who really leans into this role. I mean, this guy, this movie, rewatching this, I watched this years ago, and rewatching this really made me, because a lot of people call Tupac a fake gangster because they've seen the interviews of him at whatever drama school he went to, and he sounds pretty zesty.
A little bit zesty, yeah.
And then like, he goes from like kind of talking like this and like being like full of dreams for Broadway to be this, what, fuck your bitch, you fat motherfucker. You know, like his whole, everything changed. Thug life tatted on my chest. Like it's all, I don't know who this man is. And then watching this movie and the level of like wannabe gangster he was, it really made me. And I was always Tupac over Biggie. I've always been the biggest Tupac stan. But this rewatching this with a fresh set of eyes, I was like, this guy's not a gangster. There's just something about, and everyone says that Tupac was a magnificent actor, like everyone that's worked with him. But sometimes when people are dead, people talk him up more as well, just quietly.
Yeah, for sure.
And I just was like, this is not you, bro. This ain't it. I wasn't buying it. It made me question everything about Tupac and the gangster shit that he was living.
Do you like his role in other films that you've seen him in?
Juice, I felt the same way.
Okay.
I thought Above the Rim, I really bought it. What else have I seen him in? Can you think of any?
The only one I can think is Above the Rim.
Yeah, have you seen Juice?
No.
Oh, you got to see Juice. That's maybe next February. Above the Rim, I thought he was awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked it, Above the Rim. Yeah. That was a really good film.
I think he's in other stuff that I just can't think of right now. But Juice is great. Juice is great. But like, there is like an aspect of that. It just kind of feels like he's forcing the character a little bit. You know, I'm not Mr. Actor. I can't act. I was talking to you and Xiao and Hannah about how I can't act. And my audition for I think it was an Uber Eats commercial. And looking back on it, how bad that audition was. I'm not an actor, but I will sit here and say that people are also bad. If I'm a bad actor, then I know what bad acting is. If anything, I shouldn't know what good acting is, but I can pick a bad actor. And I don't think Tupac was as good as people were saying. No offense. And if you're listening, Tupac, which because some people think he's still around here.
Just hiding in Cuba.
Yeah. And maybe he is. Maybe he faked his own death because he was gay. And the just imagine living all that. You're saying the F word on songs. You're being a gangster and then you got to try and come out. I'd fake my own death. Maybe he's in Cuba doing dudes. I don't know. God bless the dead. yeah, so there's this storyline of Mickey Rourke and Tank sort of going head to head. Mickey Rourke also has a drug abuse problem. So that's another storyline. There's a Mickey Rourke's one of his best mates. Like his whole thing is bravado. And so speaking of bravado and like maybe being gay, that's what this guy's going through in this movie. He's like, I'm the best looking guy in here. Am I good looking? Am I good looking? I'm the best looking guy in here, right? I could fuck any girl in here, right? And then like one day they're at the batting cages and Mickey Rourke's like, you know, you're gay, right? It's like, it's because of this attachment issue you got with your mother. And he psychoanalyzes him. He's like, is this guy a junkie or a fucking psychoanalyst? It's fucking so weird. Yeah, okay. But yeah, so this guy's battling with his sexuality. Mickey Rourke's a dealer slash user in a battle with another drug kingpin. Mickey Rourke's brother, who's Adrian Brody, one of the best actors of our generation, was in this film. he thinks he's like this like generational artist. He goes into like the women's bathroom and draws on the wall, and then all the women are like around him and he's talking about himself and like his artistic expression. It's so weird. It's like, what does that have to do with anything? He gets stabbed in the hand at one point and he's like, all I have is my hands. It's like, it's fucking nuts, bro.
Yeah, that just sounds so like detached from the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
A wild little plot.
It's crazy. Like, and they don't really tie any of these stories off. And I've got another storyline for you, which is the most confusing of all. His brother, Buffalo Bill, whatever his name is, who's a phenomenal actor, by the way. If you haven't seen Silence of the Lambs, watch it. Buffalo Bill is a iconic character. And he's Mickey Rourke's other brother, who's a Vietnam veteran with PTSD and potentially paranoid schizophrenia. The set design of his bedroom was off the charts. It was just like so unrealistic, but obviously a lot of work had gone into it. Probably the most expensive part of the film, maybe, other than getting Mickey Rourke and Tupac involved. And he's just like, he's trying to gather an army together to like fight back against something. I don't know, the government. But his army that he's getting together is four kids.
All right, good luck.
Yeah, he's like, and he's out there doing all these military speeches with these kids and like teaching them how to do guns and all this shit. And you're thinking as you watch, like, oh my God, this is going to result in like a school shooting or some type of maybe shootout with the cops and these kids are going to die. Something mad dramatic and like really substantial. Just nothing. That storyline just disappears.
Yeah, okay.
And then at the end of the film, I'm going to give spoilers and we don't need to alert anybody because this film, I'll give you the score after, but we don't need to watch it. Okay. This is the second time I've watched it. This is the second time I've wasted my time watching this. And I thought, no, it'll be good to go back because a lot of times we don't revisit some movies. You revisit the classics, the ones that you love. So I was like kind of excited to rewatch something that I hadn't seen and really intend on seeing again. And seeing it again, I was just like, no, it's still bad. But it had so much potential. Like this storyline with the brother, the Vietnam vet, could have been so impactful and like and devastatingly beautiful, and it just turned into nothing. End of the film, after a club scene, Tank wants to get his revenge on Bullet, and I think Adrian Brody, whatever his name is in the film, is like, oh, they're here, we got to get out. They get out of the club. Tank's waiting outside. They have a showdown. Tank does the typical villain speech. Instead of just killing him, we got to talk about it for 10 minutes first. blows him away with a shotty. And then there's a funeral scene. There's a guy, I can't really remember what his role was. I think he's in the drug game. He kind of says, like, to Adrian Brody, come to me if you ever need anything. Like, I'd do anything for Bullet. I think gives him, like, a packet of, like, you know, 10 bands or something as well. And then the final scene is Tupac walking down an alleyway drunk, like, limping, like, fucking faded. And he goes to unlock a door. And a zip line, like, some guy, like, abseils down silently and slits his throat. And then takes his, like, ski mask down, and it's the Vietnam vet brother. And he's like, payback's a bitch. Roll credits, the end.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm sorry to spoil it, but you also don't need to see this. It was a 4 out of 10 when I first watched it. And I'm that good at reviewing movies that it's still a 4 out of 10.
Still got it. Got that knack for it.
Yeah.
How long did this go for?
Does it say there? I can't really remember. I think it was kind of short. I think it might have been around that sweet 90-minute mark.
Yeah, 1 hour 36.
Yeah, perfect. So that's how long you want it to go. Mickey Rourke, phenomenal actor. Just not much of a writer, I guess, and that's okay. You don't have to be you don't have to be good at everything. But man, he had some pieces there. It feels like a first draft almost.
Yeah, okay.
Like whoever he gave it to was like the studio head was like his dad. I was like, all right, we'll run with this.
Yeah.
And there was no rewrites, no punch ups. It seemed like a first draft. Like there was all these ideas in there that, like, even the my favorite storyline, which nothing happened, the Vietnam, that in itself could have been its own movie. Like that could have carried so much weight. The impact of coming home, like going to war and coming home and not having any sort of like de-escalation phase. Like you go, you're however long you're gone for 6 months, you're living here. You don't get to relax. You're always paranoid. You're always stressed out.
Always heightened.
Yep. They don't teach you to come back from that. They're just like, all right, you're home now. Enjoy. So you've got that aspect to it. He's living with his parents with schizophrenia with a dad that's like, get a fucking job, you bum, which is another aspect to it. His brother's a junkie. He should have been the main character with all this shit going on around him. And then he's also like, he wants to fight back against the government. And then that, yeah, if those kids like did like a school shooting or like a, yeah, like they try to do some like guerrilla warfare shit and they ended up getting killed by the police based on these poor decisions they made because some paranoid PTSD dude has like trained them up. Like that story, that's a 2.5 hour movie.
So what was the last scene that you see these kids in?
Him, he's standing on a hill and they're at the bottom of a, like listening to him like talk up like this like inspirational speech of why we're going to do what we're doing or whatever. But then it's just like nothing. Like,
then that's all you hear from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Very weird, man. And that was like the one storyline. It was the most insignificant probably in the film, but it's the one I cared about the most. And I just think it could have been something so special. But yeah, I just think, yeah, but I guess moral of the story is Tupac's probably gay.
Glad I didn't watch it, man.
Yeah. You don't need to, man.
Yeah.
I think you got to pick again.
Okay.
For the next one.
All right. I'll make sure this one doesn't expire.
Yeah. So next episode will be a bored man's pick.
We got a theme or anything?
No, I don't think so. All
right.
March Madness. We could watch like, Hoop Dreams, that shit's so depressing. Let's not watch Hoop Dream. Anyway, that's it. Four out of 10 for Bullet. You guys know what it is. Welcome to the potty on everything. Give us a follow. Give us a 5-star rating on whatever you listen to us on, Spotify, Apple, whatever. 5 stars, please, if you can. Also, tell a friend to tell a friend. That will help us grow. The reviews also help us in the algorithm. Thumbs up on YouTube, all that shit. Just do whatever. Like, it's all free. So all we're asking in return is for you to like it, subscribe, tell a friend to tell a friend. Please do that for us.
Make sure you check out claimingmathcomedy.com for my upcoming shows. Really need to sell some tickets for the ones coming out this week, week of this episode, at Distill, SWB Social Club, and the Sussex Hotel. So, yeah, if you can, please come along. If you don't have the money, DM me. I'll comp you some tickets. Love you guys. Don't forget to love yourselves. And as always, bung, bung.